from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Mina Kim, and I'm in the studio with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Mina. It's my honor to be here, and I'm so glad to see you as the Friday host for Forum.
Thank you so much. You know, your message to listeners about the prospect of another government shutdown?
Well, we have to avoid that. That's just the way it is. We have to avoid that, and we can.
Well, there's more to come with San Francisco Representative Nancy Pelosi after this news. And we'll also talk SF Beer Week, so you won't want to miss that either. Stay with us. You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. It's been a week since President Trump signed the temporary funding bill ending the record-long shutdown that saw federal workers miss two paychecks. The move was widely seen as a victory for Democrats because the bill did not include any wall funding, and as a victory for House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, San Francisco's representative, who joins us now. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mina. It's my pleasure to be with you.
We talked briefly at the billboard about the prospects of another shutdown, but February 15th is 2 weeks away, and you've reiterated once again that there won't be any wall money in the final deal. The committee to work this all out met for the first time on Wednesday, but with reportedly few signs of tangible progress, where do you put us in terms
of? Well, I am more optimistic than that. First, let me just say that when it comes to a shutdown, there are no winners. And the fact that 800,000 families had to go without their paychecks is just unconscionable. And the president said he was doing that so that he would have leverage in the negotiation over the wall. And we're saying, look, we're all for border security. Let's have a grown-up conversation, but we don't have to hold hostage 800,000 families. Not only that, more than that, the contractors, low-paid contractors who are affected by this, as well as their communities, as well as the American people who are not getting the services of our public employees, which we value, and our economy, which suffered from it. So, again, a winner is not a subject,
sure.
But again, we prevailed. And now the president is having government open so that the Congress, the House and Senate, Democrats and Republicans, the appropriators, left to their own devices, they can come to a compromise. I look to them for guidance. They know the numbers. They know the values. They know the options that are there. And I think that they can prevail without any outside interference.
And sure, no winners when it comes to a shutdown. But when you walked into your press conference this week, you said winning is good. What were you referring to?
Oh, they were teasing me about the Golden State Warriors because I had been to the game the other days
before. That was completely
before.
Taken out of context,
yeah, you're
saying.
And it wasn't only that. It was when you win, many more reporters show up at your press conference. That's what I was referencing, but also the Golden State Warriors. But it's funny because when you're in the minority, you get a nice turnout. When you're the speaker, it's a whole different thing.
Well, what are the Democrats' position on border security? What are you willing to do?
We have been very clear all along that Democrats support border security, and there are better ways to do it than devaluing who we are as a country. If you spend any time down there, you see that it's a community with a border going through it. Do we have to stop drugs, guns, other contraband for coming into our country? Of course. And there are ways to do it that protect our border in a more cost-effective way and do so with honoring our values as well. And so we have put forth, and our negotiators, again, put forth their proposal this week, and it talked about 90% of drugs, et cetera, come through the ports of entry. All of the concerns that the president talks about come through the ports of entry. So let us beef up the ports of entry with more construction, more personnel, and more lateral roads to facilitate trade, of course, security, trade, commerce, tourism, people seeking asylum in our country. Let's improve the human and physical infrastructure there. Secondly, we have now knowledge of better technology to scan cars and trucks coming through. So that's like a 700 million dollar investment in non-intrusive scanning that enables the cars to move and the trucks to move, so it doesn't hold up the traffic as well. That I think the president would be agreeable to. We've already passed the infrastructure in a bill that we sent to the Senate last week, $500 million. More judges to adjudicate these cases with more rapidly. And so we have more infrastructure, more technology, more judges, and more resources to respect the people who are coming through, so that little children do not die under the jurisdiction of the Border Patrol, so that we have food, water, clothing, medical care for people coming through.
Well, let me invite our listeners to join this conversation. We're talking with House Speaker and San Francisco Representative Nancy Pelosi. What are your questions for Speaker Pelosi? What would you like to tell her? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. Post your comments on Facebook, Twitter, or on our website, kqed.org/forum. Speaker Pelosi, how concerned are you about President Trump declaring a national emergency, which he continues to hint that he will do, calling these negotiations a waste of time if there isn't any money for a wall?
Well, I resent a president of the United States say that Congress working its will in a bipartisan way, House and Senate working together, is a waste of time. It sounds like somebody who thinks his voice is the only one that counts and we might as well all stay home and just see what his will is. And let me just say, what we're talking about, what the proposals we're making are all subject to cost-benefit analysis. What do you get for the dollar spent? And again, what is the opportunity cost of money that he wants to spend on a wall over and above these legitimate investments, which I think everybody agrees we should be doing these things. Now, over and above that, he wants $5.7 billion for a wall. What is the cost benefit of that, and what is the opportunity cost? Is he going to take it away from the Army Corps of Engineers? Is he taking it away from other natural disaster money that we need? I think it's really a bad idea just on that basis. His Republican colleagues don't like it because they don't want to see any president having that authority and using it as a precedent because, you know what, and 2 years, we're going to have a Democratic president. That's for sure.
You heard
that's
it.
A must
you
for
heard
our country. And that's not about Democrats or Republicans. That's about patriotism for America. It's
well, let's talk about the Democrats' agenda and how you're going to get there. This listener writes, I don't like Trump and didn't vote for him, especially because of health care. However, Ms. Pelosi seems to care more about poor immigrants than about poor Americans, who we almost never hear her speak about. What is Ms. Pelosi doing to help them?
Well, the fact is that our agenda for the people was the agenda on which we won the election. So while our listener may not have heard, enough people did, and they voted to elect a very strong Democratic majority. And I might say we picked up a net gain of 40 new Democrats in a very gerrymandered, voter-suppressed marketplace. So just think what we would have done in a fair arena. In any event, our For the People agenda is about lowering health care costs, and I'm glad that the listener is attuned to that, lowering health care costs by lowering the cost of prescription drugs and guaranteeing the benefit of pre-existing condition not being a barrier to access. Secondly, lower health care costs. Secondly, increase paychecks by building the infrastructure of America, good paying jobs, building in a green way and doing so in a way that has workforce development so many more people will get these good paying jobs.
Do you support single payer?
I think you put everything on the table. Single payer. I support the Affordable Care Act. I support people getting more, many more Americans having, all Americans having access to affordable health care. I think the path to that is increasing, strengthening the Affordable Care Act. There are costs involved in any proposal that people make. So you have to see what is the cost benefit to the patient and what is the benefit advantage to the patient. So I'd say just put them all on the table, see what the path is, how quickly can we get to most all Americans having access to health care. But I don't support what the Republicans are doing, which is to just unravel the Affordable Care Act.
Well, one of the first big bills you put out, H.R. 1, it's called an anti-corruption bill.
Right.
That's a top-tier priority of Democrats. Are you reading the country right with that?
Oh, yes. We have overwhelming support across the country. I think that people ask me, what's the connection between lowering health care costs and increasing paychecks to H.R. 1? Directly connected. There is a skepticism in our country about our governance in terms and our campaigns in terms of the role of big, dark, special interest money. This H.R. 1 is something that 100 candidates wrote to us in support of during the campaign. Our John Sarbanes of Maryland has taken the lead on this legislation for a number of years. And now with the Democratic victory, we have a prospect of success. But it's directly related. We want gun safety. Let's diminish the role of dark gun money in the Congress. We want lower prescription drugs. Same thing. We want raise the minimum wage. We want equal pay for equal work. Understand that the people's voice will be given a bigger volume than the special interest. The people's interest, not the special interest, H.R. 1. And in it also has passing the Voting Rights Act, which is long overdue in the Congress.
Let's talk about House Democrats' investigations. I feel like this is a tricky line for House Democrats because on one hand, you want to be able to be a strong counterweight to the president, which many Democrats do not support or agree with. But at the same time, you have been wanting to tread a careful line to make sure that the country is with you. What are the investigations that you plan, that your Democrats plan to pursue the subpoena power? That how will you wield it in a way that will manage this line?
Well, first of all, let me say that Article 1 of the Constitution is the legislative branch. The legislative branch has the power of the purse, and the legislative branch has the power to declare war. The legislative branch has the responsibility to exercise oversight over the other branches of government, starting with the executive branch. So when the White House tries to say, well, they're investigating this or that, no. We would be delinquent in our duties if we did not exercise our oversight over any president, Democratic or Republican, because we allocate the resources when we make sure that they are husbanded properly, that they are spent wisely, and that they get the result that was intended by the Congress. So again, we would, as I say, be delinquent without oversight. The Republicans and the White House likes to say oversight investigations are the same thing. Well, they aren't. But if we need investigations, we will pursue them because we have seen in this administration a culture of corruption, cronyism, and incompetence in dealing with the public responsibility to enforce the law, to execute the law.
Do you think the president has committed impeachable offenses?
I'm not going to impeachment. That's up to, we'll see what the Mueller investigation results in, and we can go from there. But the investigations, use of subpoena power, that is something that we will be strategic in about how we use it. But we will not be delinquent in our duties in not using it.
Well, Trish in Sebastopol, you're on with Speaker Pelosi.
Hi, Trish.
Hello. I'm a disabled senior that gratefully receives HUD Section 8 rent assistance. And I'm very concerned that in 2 weeks we might face another shutdown that would eliminate the funding for that program.
Well, you have. Excuse me.
Yes, go ahead, Speaker Pelosi. Thanks,
Trish. No, Trish, if you're not, did you have more to say, Trish?
I'm sorry.
I didn't know if you were finished.
Yes.
Your comment. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you have that's a legitimate concern because when you shut down government, people's, you know, you have to understand that many of the Republicans in Washington do not believe in governance. So shutting down government and shrinking it is part of their goal. So overwhelmingly, they vote to shut down government and vote to keep it shut down. But the fact is that this is about delivery of services to the American people, and you can't deliver the services if the people are not in their jobs. And that's a legitimate concern that you have. But have this also this peace of mind. We are not going to allow them to shut down government again.
Trish, thanks for the call.
And public opinion is our biggest friend in all of this, because whether people agree with the wall or not, they all agree we shouldn't shut down government to discuss it.
Well, Caroline in Oakland, you're on.
Hi, Speaker Pelosi.
Hi,
I am really worried about the threat of wildfires and persistent drought in California. Very curious about how big a role climate change and climate legislation will play in the House Democrat strategy, and especially wondering about the Green New Deal and how it can address both of these issues by creating millions of good jobs and protecting our planet. So really curious on your thoughts on that and committing to helping the Green New Deal pass in the House.
Caroline, thanks. And the Green New Deal is the document of trying to get the U.S. to produce all of its energy from renewable sources by 2030. Do you support it?
No, I mean, when I say this, that when I was Speaker of the House, my flagship issue was the climate crisis and energy, reducing our dependence on fossil fuels and foreign oil. The when we got the White House with President, that was with President Bush, with President Obama, of course, health care emerged as the preeminent issue, and I'm so glad that it did. But we did continue our work on that. Under President Bush, we passed the biggest energy bill in the history of our country, the equivalent of taking millions and millions of cars off the road by raising the emission standards, the CAFE standards, as you know, and renewable fuel standard, all kinds of things that President Obama later used as his authorities to do executive actions to protect our environment and reduce greenhouse gases. The at that time I created a special select committee on climate crisis and energy independence. The Republicans eliminated that when they took over. I'm instituting it again, and maybe today or tomorrow that I'll make the announcements of the people on that select committee, and its purpose is to address the climate crisis. But I this time have made it because there's so much more public awareness, thank God, that this will be a Congress-wide initiative. Our select committee will take testimony, raise the visibility of what is possible. But the committees of jurisdiction have all made this a priority as well, whether it's energy and commerce, natural resources, homeland security, science committee, of transportation committee, and everything that they do. How is it in furtherance of addressing the climate crisis? And many people have been more aware because, as you indicated, whether it's fires in California, hurricanes in the rest of the country, other natural disasters that have a direct relationship to the climate crisis.
We're feeling it. This listener asks, how is she training the next generation of leaders in the House to wield the power of the speakership the way she does? Her skill set must live on. Speaker Pelosi, you said that you see yourself as a transitional speaker in one interview. Is this it for you? Is this the last term?
I wouldn't think of it becoming a lame duck at 10 o'clock in the morning on a Friday in San Francisco.
So you're not going to leave?
No, I'm not. Yes, we all leave at some point. But I am very proud of the opportunities I have put in place over my years in leadership for new young people to come forward. And right now, our leadership, some of them have emerged into even higher positions. They have to be elected by the caucus. But if I start naming names, it'll be a long list. And if it's a long list, I'm bound to leave somebody off. So I won't go down that path. But I think if anybody just looks to our leadership ranks, they will see beautiful diversity, a new generation of leaderships. And again, I have instituted now a modernization of Congress select committee led by Adam Kilmer, Derek Kilmer of Washington State. And he is part of that is part of the leadership orientation for the future. One thing I would say is there's nothing they need. There's no secret sauce here. It's about building consensus within your party. It's also about recognizing the strength that our diversity is. And I say to the members every day, our diversity is our strength. Our unity is our power.
Speaker Pelosi, I was struck by something you said in an interview shortly before the midterms to the effect of, and this was when there was a question being asked about whether you should be speaker again, because there was a lot of talk about that. A lot of that has quieted down since the shutdown negotiations. But you said something along the lines of, now, if Hillary had won, maybe I would be more open.
Yeah.
And it made me wonder how important you think it is for a woman to be in that top tier. I mean, you are second in line to the presidency. Mm. Can you give me a specific example of when you felt that being a woman made the difference?
Well, when I was at the table and looked around and saw who was else was at the table, what I said then was not only about if Hillary had won, but I said I would know then that the Affordable Care Act would be intact. I knew the assault that they had been making scores of time, over 60 times, to undermine the Affordable Care Act. And I did not, and I found that as a pillar of financial and health security for Americans. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act. And that's why, as we go forward with that, we have to understand that the Affordable Care Act is the path to health care for all Americans. But it was also important to have a woman at the table, more than one woman. I mean, we want more, but we certainly don't want less. And that's what it would have been if I had not won.
I've noticed also that it feels like you talk about your strengths more plainly than earlier in your career. You say, I am a master legislator.
Yes.
I am the best fundraiser. That immodesty, for lack of a better word, feels deliberate.
Yeah, it is. But you know why? Because I want to be an example to women. I'm saying to women, look, for too long I was not proclaiming why I should be this or that. And the press makes a big deal of some small dissension in our ranks. And I said, Republicans should not be choosing our leaders. In this past campaign, the Republicans used my name in 132,000 ads, and it wasn't complimentary. So when they do that in districts where people are running, I say to them, just win, baby. Don't worry about me. Worry about winning, because everything is at stake. One in five children in America lives in poverty. They're degrading the air our children breathe, the water. The list goes on. You know what it is. So I thought, you know what? I have to say to women, be confident. Be out there. Shine your light. Know your power. And let people know why none of us is indispensable. But some of us just think we would do a better job than somebody else. And that's why people run for office. And that's why I ran for Speaker of the House.
There have been a bunch of memes since the shutdown ended that basically say that you have things like the president's parts in your purse, or that in some way he was emasculated as a result of you getting the upper hand in this negotiation. How do you feel about that comparison, that when a woman wins, the male is emasculated?
Well, I don't go there. I think that part of my strength and the strength of the Democrats is the tone with which we have confronted this president. We respect the office that he holds. He's the president of the United States. We disagree with his tone, his lack of dignity, and the way he talks about women and the rest, but we're not stooping to his level. So the dignity, the tone, the confidence that we have in what we believe in, the connection to the American people about the concerns in their lives, which are about their kitchen table concerns. Are they going to be able to feed the family, pay the rent, pay the mortgage, pay the credit card bill, send their kids to scoots off to school and the rest.
House.
That is what is important, not the language that the president uses from time to time.
And House Speaker Nancy Pelosi,
don't associate
thank
myself
you.
With that language. Thank you.